The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Variety Channel. For more information about our network and to check out additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericavariety.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the hosts or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
When you turn on the evening news, do you see what you want to see or what you need to see? Welcome to Bread for the Journey, Ordinary People Doing Extraordinary Deeds, with your host, Mariana Cacciatore. It seems like more often than not, the good news and people that are making it are buried into a two-minute feature piece near the end of the report. What about giving these people and this kind of news a full hour every week? Now, here's your host, Mariana Cacciatore.
Hello and welcome to Bread for the Journey Radio. We'll be talking today with John Lozier, Executive Director of the National Healthcare for the Homeless Council, which is a membership organization that serves a million homeless people a year. But first, I'd like to share with you a little bit about Bread for the Journey, who we are, and why we host a radio show. We're a nonprofit organization that's been around for about 25 years, actually, and when we started, it was really a simple idea. One person, his name was Wayne Muller, who was a minister and a therapist and an author who was doing private practice work with therapy clients. And he decided one day to take a percentage of the money that his clients were giving him, and together they would put that money into a kitty that would then be given away out into the community as a way to represent the healing that was taking place in that room and spread it out widely into the community. And at the end of the year, he had a couple of thousand dollars, and so he called a few friends over for spaghetti dinner and said, "Okay, I've got this money. What do you want to do with it? I don't really want to give it away alone. I'd rather do it with friends." And Bread for the Journey was born at that time. And the way that, and now today we have 26 chapters, small volunteer-run chapters in 26 cities around the country, who raise money from people they know and love. The board of directors typically throws a little bit in themselves, and they pool that money together, and then in a very relationship-centered way, give it away in the same community in which it was raised. And so when I say in a very relationship-centered way, what I mean is we're not really typical foundations in the sense that we even ask for grant proposals. When someone contacts us and says they'd like a grant, or they've got a project that they're doing in the local community and they need some funding, you know, we might ask a few questions on the phone or via email, but and if the fit is right, then what we do is invite them over. We maybe meet at a coffee shop, maybe meet in somebody's living room, and together we talk about, in person to person, what it is they're doing in the community. And typically we give to organizations that are sort of small and grassroots like us. You know, individual people who often have lived through some difficulty in their life, and now they're on the other side of it, and they want to give back in some way to the community. They know something about that particular issue because, you know, they've been in it. And so over time, our volunteers really get to meet some of the most incredible people in the communities in which they live, and help them in the ways that they can. You know, our grants are typically, sometimes they're $250, sometimes they're $500, sometimes they're $1,000, you know, $1,500. It depends on what the need is in the community. Rarely is it over that, I mean, although it does happen. So they're called micro grants. But over a period of time, as I said, the people who run our chapters really get to meet a lot of incredible people in the community. And a couple of times a year, they'll have an event in which they just bring together all the people that gave them that money that they were able to give away, and then all of the people to whom they gave the money. And everyone gets to be together in a heartfelt kind of way, meet one another, and often our donors develop direct relationships then with the people to whom we've given grants. And in that way, we create a kind of a shared community, one in which, you know, everyone develops kind of a personal relationship with who these people are in the community. The good, there are many good-hearted people. We don't connect with all of them in a community, but these good-hearted people find their way to each other and get to feel like a family, in a sense, community members who are making a difference, a shared experience of life in a community. And so, you know, at one point our board of directors got together and said, one of the things we need to do is get the word out more about who we are. And the idea came to us that perhaps a radio show might be a nice way, because it's consistent with who we are. We're getting to meet some of the most incredible people in a community. And now through the radio show once each week, I get to introduce you to some of those people. I don't only interview people to whom we've given grants. Sometimes I go beyond that, but often it fits within the guideline of this show, which is ordinary people doing extraordinary deeds. And the way I came to know John Lozier is through somebody who ran our chapter in San Diego for a long time, Tom Stuber, and he is a big admirer of John Lozier and called me one day and said, this is a guy you have to meet, and it would be great if you could do a radio show. So that's really how this has been born, this interview today. So now I'd like to introduce you to John. He's been executive director of the National Health Care for the Homeless Council since its founding in January 1990, and he oversees all aspects of the council's activity in advocacy, training, technical assistance, research, peer support, organizing, and fund development. Prior to his employment with the National Healthcare Council for the Homeless, I said that backwards, didn't I? They have the initials here, and I get it mixed up. I'm sorry, John.
It's easy to do.
He was director of services for the homeless for the Metropolitan Health Department in Nashville and Davidson County, with responsibility for development and operation of a specialized primary care clinic and a multi-service daycare center for homeless people. He had earlier served as the family advocate at Family and Children's Service in Nashville and as Tennessee director of Southern Prison Ministry. John holds a master's degree in social work from the University of Tennessee and a Bachelor of Arts in Religious Studies from Brown University. He's also studied in the Divinity School of Vanderbilt University. So, John, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Mariana. I really appreciate the invitation. Any friend of Tom Stuberud's is a friend of mine.
That's great. I've had a great time with him. He's a delightful man, good-hearted, really good-hearted person. So, John, how many homeless people? I know it's hard to count, but how many homeless people do you think we have in the United States?
It's really hard to count. Part of the experience of being homeless is, for many people, trying to be invisible so that the adverse consequences that relate to that status don't attach. Every January, the Department of Housing and Urban Development has its grantees around the country do a one-night count of homeless people, and they come up with about 625,000 people on a nightly basis. Those are, of course, the people that they can find. They are largely in shelters, and the people whom they can find on the streets, mostly in urban areas. Everybody knows that that's a grotesque undercount. There have been studies in the past, telephone surveys, that have estimated that as many as 1 in 7 Americans have experienced homelessness at some times in their lives. Mm. In part, it depends on how you define homelessness. There are uncounted thousands and hundreds of thousands of people who are doubled and tripled up in their in the homes of their friends and their relatives. And often that is a kind of a first step on the path to street and shelter homelessness and to the condition of chronic homelessness, which is what we recognize on the streets. We see lots of people who are homeless and who we would never know just from looking at them are homeless. And the that chronic homeless population, defined by the feds as having multiple episodes of homelessness within a year or over a longer period of time and having a chronic disability, that population has become the focus of a lot of the federal funding and the organizing work that's going on in this country to end homelessness altogether, kind of a first step right. for many people.
You know, when I was a kid, we didn't use the word homeless, and I never saw homeless people, even though for the early years of my childhood, I lived on the poorer side of town. When did the numbers of homeless begin to escalate? What happened?
I had the same experience, Mariana. I remember I grew up outside Atlanta, and I remember Bobby, who stood outside the little barbecue joint and shoe store, who was intellectually impaired and waved at everybody. In those days, there were places for people like Bobby to live, and those began to disappear really in the late 1950s and in the 1960s with the deinstitutionalization movement in the mental health world. What really happened, though, was in the early 1980s, there was a sudden explosion of homelessness on the streets, and that has endured. There are a number of factors that all added up at the same time. One was that baby boomers like you and me, or me anyway.
Yeah, me too.
Came, you know, we reached the age where of the onset of schizophrenia. And over the years prior to that, the census of the state hospitals had been reduced. There was not a mass exodus from the mental institutions to the streets, but a more gradual one. And then the boomers hit and showed up on, you know, visibly on the streets as part of what we came to know as that chronically homeless population. But that was really a relatively minor factor. The big thing that happened was that in the late years of the Carter administration, and with a vengeance in the early years of the Reagan administration in the early 1980s, the budget for the Federal Department of Housing and Urban Development was slashed by like 75%. So the housing supports that underlay, you know, people's basic ability to live in the community were really jerked out from under them rather precipitously. And all of a sudden, there were hundreds of thousands of people on the streets in America. There were other factors. There was also, at the time, what's now called the Reagan Recession. There was 10% unemployment in the early 1980s. So you couple that with mental illness, with veterans returning from Vietnam, traumatized, and the housing cuts, and you've got a recipe for disaster. It was like a perfect storm resulting in homelessness. Mm-hmm. We haven't fixed much of that in the intervening 30 years.
Yeah, there seems to be a mindset among some that just doesn't want to do it, even though people may pay lip service. I don't know. I don't quite know what to do. I'm quite liberal in this regard. I don't want people scamming the system, but I do understand that the need is huge, and I have such a hard time understanding why or how we can't come together to make a difference in the lives of those that are chronically homeless or those who are mentally ill and on the streets?
Well, there's some things that are being done, and I'm sure we'll talk about some of those in the course of this conversation. But, you know, people are torn. Nobody wants to see dependency or wants to see people, you know, having to live, you know, on the mercy of the government or of charity. But everybody sort of resonates with it. People recognize that, you know, but for the grace of God, go I.
Mm-hmm.
Very often these days, homelessness is precipitated by nothing less common than a serious illness.
Right.
People get sick, they lose their jobs, they lose their income, they lose their housing. Then it's to somebody's couch, then it's to the streets.
Right.
And the people who get driven, who get squeezed out in that system that is housing poor, are the people who tend to have the most severe personal problems. People
right.
with mental illnesses or addictions who can't maintain that sort of relationship crowded into somebody else's house.
Right, right, right. Well, we're at a place where we need to take a break. So to our listening audience, this is just the beginning of what I believe will be a rich conversation with John Lozier. Please stay with us. We'll be back in a moment.
Be sure to friend us on Facebook. You can do it right now. Visit facebook.com/Voice America or search for us at keyword Voice America.
What sets apart VoiceAmerica.tv from the other video content providers on the Internet? Choice and flexibility means that you can host your video content live or on demand on the main VoiceAmerica.tv channels through your own branded media player or your own private TV channel. We support multiple media formats, so all of your video content can be in one place. We offer a number of advertising and video packages. For more information, visit VoiceAmerica.tv. If you think you've seen online TV like this before, let us surprise you.
Do you know that over 70% of Americans with severe disabilities are unemployed? Are you one of the 2.5 million Americans with epilepsy? If you are, or know someone struggling with these issues, tune in to Disability Matters with Joyce Bender. On the show, Joyce will discuss these issues as well as others. She will have on nationally known guests that will offer helpful insight on disability matters and let you, the listener, call in with your questions and concerns. So if you struggle with a disability or know someone who does, listen to Disability Matters with Joyce Bender. Heard every Tuesday at 11 a.m. Pacific Time here on VoiceAmerica.com.
Adoption changes a family forever, for the adopters as well as the adoptees. There are many adjustments that need to be made, from lifestyle to financial, and the personal rewards are unlimited. Listen every week for Your Adoption Coach with Kelly Ellison. We will examine in detail such topics as international and domestic adoption. We will talk with adoption professionals and hear stories about real families adopting. If you've been thinking about adoption or recently began the process, you'll want to tune in to be inspired every Saturday at 3 p.m. Eastern Time, noon Pacific, on Voice America Variety.
We're making it easier to listen to the Voice America Talk Radio Network live wherever you go on iPhone, BlackBerry, or Android. Download it from the Apple iTunes App Store, BlackBerry App World, or Android Market.
You are tuned in to Bread for the Journey, ordinary people doing extraordinary deeds, with your host, Mariana Cacciatore. If you have a question or comment about the program, or have an idea for a person you would like featured on a future program, please send an email to bfjradio@gmail.com. That's bfjradio@gmail.com. And now, back to Bread for the Journey.
Welcome back, and we're here today talking about homelessness, and we've laid the groundwork for where we are and how we got here, and we're going to be talking about what is being done and what kinds of things we can do. And we're having a great conversation with John Lozier, Executive Director of the National Healthcare for the Homeless Council. So, I was taking a look, John, at your at the principles that create the, you know, your mission, the principles that you believe in. And I'd just like to state them first, and then we can just have a conversation. I don't have a specific question, but I'm sure that there are some things that you can say about why these are so important to you, that I thought they were great. 5 points. The first one is homelessness is unacceptable. Second one is every person has the right to adequate food, housing, clothing, and health care. Third one, all people have the right to participate in the decisions affecting their lives. Fourth, contemporary homelessness is the product of conscious social and economic policy decisions that have retreated from a commitment to ensuring basic life necessities for all people. And fifth, the struggle to end homelessness and alleviate its consequences takes many forms, including efforts to ensure adequate housing, health care, and access to meaningful work. There's a lot that's in there, as I said, there really is. But I think just even beginning with homelessness is unacceptable. I think what I heard you say is that depending on where you stand and how to fix the problem, you really believe that most people feel that is true.
I think most people do. It's easy to blame the victim, if you will. But the problem has reached such massive proportions in our country that it's also pretty easy to see that there are bigger systemic things going on that should not be going on and rendering our neighbors and family members homeless.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we started with that statement when we wrote our statement of principles almost 20 years ago now, a little over 20, because, you know, the attitude in the country had not quite reached that point yet.
Mm-hmm.
There was still a sense that, okay, these people have chosen to be street alcoholics. They just want to, people choose homelessness. They just want to go out and, you know, live like Huck Finn or something, or move west and ride the rails in great American traditions. I think we've gotten past that as a society now. You don't hear very frequently anymore people saying, oh, you know, they just choose to be homeless.
Mm-hmm.
The cards are stacked against a lot of people, and people recognize that.
Mm-hmm. I go into the city and I see a lot of homeless people, and at some point I made a decision that what I was going to do is just kind of check in with myself when I approach somebody or somebody approached me, and develop a sense of inner strength around my decision making. Is this somebody I want to give money to, or is it not? Because I couldn't give money to everybody, and I wanted to help in some way. And so that's really what I did. And after a while, I began feeling like I wanted to give more. And I didn't, you know, it didn't feel like I had more to give. But what I began doing was every day when I got into my car, I would take a dollar out of my wallet and throw it in the ashtray. And oftentimes there are people on the street when you're driving your car. But, you know, I don't see them in where I live every day. I live in Marin County. And so it would happen every 3 or 4 or 5 or 6 days, or maybe even 2 weeks might go by. And so at some point, then whenever I saw somebody and that feeling came up, this is somebody I want to help, I would just grab everything that was in the ashtray and be able to give them $5 or $10. And then, of course, I began talking to people who were saying, you know, this is not a good thing to do. You just support the whole idea that panhandling is an okay thing to do. What we really want to do is direct people into programs where they receive services. Can you tell me, as an individual person, like, that's one thing I know I can do, but am I doing the wrong thing?
Oh, you know, if you're following your conscience, you are not doing the wrong thing. I struggle with that myself. I obviously encounter lots of folks in the places in this country where I walk around. And sometimes I make the choice to, you know, dig into my pocket and pull out all the change and drop it into that cup. And sometimes I don't. In responding, and often you have, you know, it's just a momentary opportunity to respond. I try not to judge. You know, it's easy to jump to a judgment. It's easy to think, oh, this person looks like an alcoholic. If I give them, 75 cents, it's just going to go toward a big bottle of, strong beer.
Right.
But you never really know. Why we're so torn is we are taught, many of us, from childhood, you know, if somebody asks for your coat, give them your shirt as well, and to respond as generously as you possibly can. If you're acting out of that spirit, you're probably not doing wrong. What I hope we can point people toward is seeing in those haggard faces a need to work for change in new ways.
Mm-hmm.
And your description at the top of this interview about the work that you are doing told me that, you know, that is what you are doing.
Mm-hmm.
Like you at Bread for the Journey, what we are, you know, about at our very core is building relationships. So, you know, probably more important than that dollar bill is looking the person in the eye and acknowledging them and acknowledging their humanity and seeing where it goes from there. You know, we talk to homeless people who tell us things like, nobody has spoken to me today.
Oh.
You're the first person who said hello.
Oh.
Or in some of our work, we'll acknowledge somebody's birthday. He'll tell us they never had a birthday party.
Mm.
And these are maybe extreme sort of cases, but they're realities in our day-to-day life. And overcoming those artificial barriers of class and race and, you know, intellectual ability that exists between people is really the most important thing we can do. At least it's the most important first step.
Mm-hmm.
One of our principles that you were reading, the third one there, is that people have a right to participate in the decisions that they affect their lives. And we've worked really hard over time to make that a reality in our organization. And I think probably the thing I'm most proud of that goes beyond all the clinical improvements that we've been able to foster and all the policy changes that, you know, for example, make it easier for people to enroll in Medicaid when Medicaid expansion comes around next year, is that we've built an organization that includes people who have experienced homelessness, who participate with us in our decision-making in virtually every committee in our organization, and there's a raft of them at the board level when we elect the board. They're people who know homelessness firsthand, involved in those decisions, which are made by consensus, so they're fully involved in those decisions. And you know, we've developed, you know, real respectful mutual relationships with people. And it is there that I see a seed of hope for the future.
Well, you just said a mouthful. That's an amazing thing, having been in business as many years as I have, to have a commitment to bringing those who are receiving your services to the boardroom table and give them a voice in the decision-making, and then decision-making by consensus, which is a, you know, which is a laborious process. It takes a big commitment to go in that direction.
It does, but it's important.
Right. I understand.
It's democracy at its best, and it's grounded in, you know, a growing recognition globally of what human rights is all about.
Right. So why don't you, for our audience, expand out the, you've told us a bit, which I think is probably foundational and really important, that building relationships is at the core of everything that you do, and you've shown us how you do that. How about if we pan the camera out, understanding that premise, and tell us more about what the National Healthcare for the Homeless Council does?
Okay. Well, we are a membership organization of people who are involved in direct work, usually healthcare work, with people who are homeless. We started really right as the epidemic of homelessness burst forth in the early 1980s as part of a demonstration project. There were 19 original foundation-funded projects trying to show that healthcare providers could establish effective treatment relationships with people who were all of a sudden appearing on the streets and seemed to be very, very medically challenged, and that included behavioral health problems, mental illnesses, and addictions. We established that and a federal program through the McKinney Homeless Assistance Act, the big emergency federal response to homelessness in the mid-1980s, among other things, duplicated what we were already doing in 19 cities, and is now funding 248 primary care projects around the country. Our members are mostly those clinic organizations, and then a number of individuals who are organized into three groups. The homeless and formerly homeless people have their own, you know, sort of reference group and base. In the health center world that we're part of, we refer to them as consumers. I don't like the term, but that's what we inherited. And so the National Consumer Advisory Board is part of our organization. There's also the Healthcare for the Homeless Clinicians Network, and a body called the Respite Care Providers Network. That's maybe a good example of what we try to do, the respite care providers. We have, over time, built a constituency for and an understanding of the need for people who don't have homes when they get out of the hospital to... Are we there?
We still have another minute or so. It's okay.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. I lost my my video screen here. We have recognized and promoted the need for people when they're getting out of the hospital and don't have a place to go home to recuperate,
right,
to have a place to go.
Right.
So, you know, we do the research that's necessary to show the cost savings and the clinical outcomes that you can achieve. We do the organizing that's necessary for people at the local level to organize respite care programs of their own. And then we work on the policy level to assure that there is funding available to make that happen. And we try to do that repeatedly, looking for opportunities to build effective clinical services for people, all in the context of, you know, one-on-one relationships.
And if I were, we've got a break in just a minute, but if I were just an individual that wanted to educate myself, I could become a member of your organization and read your materials. That would really expand my understanding.
Absolutely. If you want to spend a short amount of time or days and days and days, our website is a very rich resource. It's www.nhchc.org.
Right. Okay, we've got to take another break. So to our listening audience, stay with us. We'll be back in just a moment.
What's going on behind the scenes with your favorite Voice America show or host? For the latest news, visit the iRadio blog at iradioblog.com.
Think of the world 50 years ago. Now think of this same world and how it'll be 50 years from now. Did you know that if the world's population continues to grow at its current rate, our children and grandchildren will only have 25% of the resources per capita that our parents and grandparents had? We must preserve the foundation of a quality standard of living. That foundation starts with Go Green Radio. Join your host, Jill Buck, for Go Green Radio every Friday at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Voice America.
Are you a single parent trying to create the balance between home life and work life? You may be running a successful business, but how are your relationships with your family and children? If you're one of the thousands of people trying to juggle it all, tune in to Straight Up with Chris, real talk on business and parenthood, hosted by Chris Efesiou. Chris is the portrait of the success story. Coming to the U.S. with no language skills, founding and growing several businesses, while raising his daughter from age 7 to adulthood as a single dad. Listen every Thursday at 6 p.m. Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific on Voice America Variety.
These days, everyone is looking for information on staying young, healthy, and fit. The Voice America Health and Wellness Network is here to help you on your quest to better health and a better you. We talk about everything from diet, fitness, and aging to substance abuse, personal growth, mental health, and much more. Learn from our experts who cover health and wellness from traditional and holistic perspectives. Tune in to the Voice America Health and Wellness Network. Healthy living starts here.
Be sure to friend us on Facebook. You can do it right now. Visit Facebook.com/Voice America or search for us at keyword Voice America.
You are tuned in to Bread for the Journey, ordinary people doing extraordinary deeds, with your host, Mariana Cacciatore. If you have a question or comment about the program, or have an idea for a person you would like featured on a future program, please send an email to bfjradio@gmail.com. That's bfjradio@gmail.com. And now, back to Bread for the Journey.
Welcome back, and we're here today talking with John Lazier, Executive Director of the National Healthcare for the Homeless Council. And John, you know, your education involves an undergraduate in religious studies and divinity work at Vanderbilt. And I'm wondering if you can tell us a little bit about this and your background and how you came to find yourself doing the work that you're doing today.
Sure. Thank you for asking. I was on a path to become a preacher and a lawyer. It was a joint program, actually, at Vanderbilt. And I was going to go out and change the world working through those institutions, the church and the state. And I wrote a paper on the prison chaplaincy as a divinity student that caught the attention of a guy named Will Campbell, who was recently passed away. He was a white civil rights activist here in the South. And he gave me an opportunity to leave that academic program and get on with my work in the world. I already knew I wanted to work for justice. And he gave me an opportunity to work with people in prison and their families. And, so we worked with, guys on death row, and we trained their lawyers and did a number of things, including a little hospitality program that allowed prisoners' families to come to come visit their loved ones who were locked up in the state prisons, which were concentrated here in Nashville at the time. In the course of that, homeless people started using that hospitality house that we were running in an apartment upstairs from where my new wife and I lived. And, you know, we just got to know people, and that drew us into work organizing originally soup kitchens and then a family shelter, because still it's the case that many families who are homeless are separated by gender and age into different shelters. We created a place where people could live together, could find shelter together, because people needed that. And then ultimately into health care. Over time, my theological perspective morphed into more of a human rights sort of analysis and perspective, but contained still a lot of the same elements, the universal elements that call on us in religion and in human rights theory as well to respect the dignity of everybody. And so I began looking for ways to do that and to live that out. I've been really fortunate in my career to have found this healthcare for the homeless world, to have been there at the beginning of it, because it draws such a remarkable set of people. We've already mentioned Tom Stubberud, but there are hundreds and hundreds of others around the country who are engaged in this work. And, you know, we have built a community, and it's a community of people. Are, you know, I had a conversation with one of them earlier this week, and they were saying, the people are all just so nice in this work. It's and you know, there's an element of that, but you know, there are a lot of people who've had real staying power in this movement, and I think that's possible because of the individual relationships, but maybe as much because it's a field where you can see the day-to-day work that you're doing, which is not easy in a broader context. It's maybe much easier to see the work that we're doing to assure that homeless people and everybody else has access to health care and housing as part of something much, much bigger than, you know, what you might see in a normal clinical practice, you know, doing primary care for people who are, you know, relatively well off and come in. We see that we're making a real difference, not just in people's lives, but in the environment in which people exist.
So I'm wondering, maybe when you began this job, what kind of expectations and hopes you had, and how are you in relationship to those today?
We thought we would work ourselves out of a job. I mentioned earlier that the McKinney Act in 1987 was the federal government's emergency response to homelessness. You know, we thought it was a blip. We've come to understand that it's symptomatic, as our principles that you read say, of, you know, really conscious social and economic policy decisions at high levels of government, and that this struggle that we're engaged in is a much longer term struggle that will outlive us. It's part of the reason we have to build community, is so that the work will continue, because it's not work we're gonna you know, finish anytime soon.
Yeah,
there's some promising things happening, and I wouldn't want to talk about this without mentioning, you know, what's going on around identifying people who are the sickest, most likely to die on the streets, and how they are being prioritized for what housing there is. There's some values questions that come into play when we do that. How do we balance, you know, the needs of somebody who has been chronically homeless and, you know, has got cancer, with the needs of a young family that might escape homelessness forever when you've got one housing voucher. How do you do that? But that's part of the richness of our field. It's, you know, those questions are raised, and we get to grapple with them. And we don't grapple with them in the abstract. We grapple with them in the context of people's lives.
We could have a whole show just about that particular issue, the ethical decisions that the people who are members of your organization have to face every day.
We could indeed.
We could.
Let's do.
All right, I'll invite you back and we'll talk about homelessness and ethics. Well, you know, there are two films that I have recently seen that just came to mind, and I wanted to say them on the air and share them with you as well, because I think they're worth watching. One you'll be very interested in is called Unlikely Friends, and it is just being released now. It's a documentary about forgiveness, and it features five adult people who were survivors of homicide. Most of them had a child who was murdered on the street. One of them was actually a policeman who was shot himself. But all five of them have made a decision to forgive the person who did the murdering. And so this very much takes place in the prison system. And you had worked in the prison system and talked a little bit about it. It's an incredible film, and I just think you would really appreciate it, John. Great, great film.
I will look for that. Thank you. That sort of reconciliation is, was the core of our theological thinking.
Right. And this one pertains more to the subject that we're talking about today, and it's a film called Innocente. Have you heard of it?
No, I have not.
Innocente is the name of a young girl, and I became aware of her because our chapter in Orange County gave her a grant. She's a young girl who was homeless most of her life, and from 7 years on, and she's, I think, 18 years old now. And somewhere in a homeless shelter in San Diego, she was doing some artwork, and an arts organization that was providing services to the homeless noticed that she had a particular talent, and artistically, and so they began nurturing that talent. And at some point, you know, closer to 16 or 17 years old, there was a couple of people who wanted to do a documentary film that were traveling the country looking for a very specific subject, and she ended up fitting that. They asked her if she would be the subject of it, and she said yes. The film has gone on to win the Academy Award this year for documentary short, and she's homeless in this film, and they follow her around, and at some point she is given the opportunity to participate in a one-woman art show, and in a short period of time, like 3 months, she has to produce 30 works of art, which she does, and goes on to do a show in which she sells every single piece of art at the show. And one of the things that she does, and it just kind of blew me away, is, and they don't say it much on the show, I interviewed her on Bread for the Journey Radio, so if you go into archives, you can hear the interview. She took 50% of the money that she had made and gave it to the arts organization that was providing services to the homeless.
Wow.
I know. This is a young... I know. Can you just imagine? She's been homeless her entire life.
And followed your example.
Exactly. I just bow to this young 18-year-old girl. I'm just amazed. Anyway, the film is fabulous, and you can Google her name, and it's spelled with one N, Innocente.
Okay. I will certainly do that. We're going to be in Orange County for one of the trainings we do fairly regularly, and I'll be interested in finding her, perhaps.
Yeah, she's in San Diego, and you may be in touch with the arts organization. I'm sure they'd welcome you in, and So I would ask you this. What is the most enjoyable part of your job?
I can go real quickly to the worst part. The enjoyable parts are many, but the answer is probably the same in both cases. It's the people.
Mm-hmm.
You've heard what satisfaction I take in our having been able to bridge some gaps in human relationships. The least enjoyable part, and I presume you're going there, is I'm the executive director of an organization with 20 employees, and they're wonderful people who fit the mold, but personnel is the hardest part of any executive director's job.
One executive director to another, I do understand. Yeah.
Yes. Yes. It's the most enjoyable part is watching people grow in their understanding of their own worth and their own ability to foster change. Mm-hmm. Watching people, come to understand that this is a long haul, developing people to be long distance runners rather than sprinters.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's really satisfying. It gives me this, as I'm a baby boomer, I'm, looking at my own mortality. It gives me a sense that maybe I'm helping to leave something behind that's really worthwhile. There are, of course, other areas where I see that in my family life and whatnot, but in my professional life, that's the satisfying piece.
That's great to hear. It's good work you do, John. Thank you for doing it.
And you too, Mariana, thank you very much for this opportunity to learn about your work and to get to know you a little bit.
Great. If you ever meet anybody that might like to start a chapter in your neck of the woods, we're always looking for people who want to nurture the seed of generosity in their own heart and to be vehicles for doing that in the world.
When you were describing it at the top, I thought of some people here in Nashville who would like to be part of that.
That's great. That's great. We'll have another conversation, and I will call you back because I think it might be very nice to have a show, very interesting to have a show about the ethical decisions you face every day.
Sure.
Very enlightening.
That's great. I'd want to get some actual providers involved in that. Mm-hmm. That would be fun.
That'd be fun. So to our listening audience, we're about to close, but I hope you've had a great show. I certainly have. And thank you so much, John.
Thanks, Mariana. I've enjoyed it.
Yeah.
Peace.
Peace to you. Bread for the Journey is a nonprofit organization, and we could use your support. If you find a place in your heart to make a financial contribution, and we've got a bit of a shortfall this year happening with our budget, so really we could use your help. Or if you'd like to start a chapter of Bread for the Journey in your town, please go to our website at breadforthejourney.org. I believe that if we all pitch in a little bit, we can change the world. And I close today, as I do every show, with this. May all beings be happy. May all beings be safe. May all beings be free.
We hope our program inspired you this week. Please join Mariana Cacciatore for another edition of Bread for the Journey next Saturday at noon Eastern Time, 9 a.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Variety Channel. Enjoy the rest of your weekend.
Thanks again for listening to the preceding program brought to you on the Voice America Variety Channel. For more information about our network and to check out additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericavariety.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the preceding program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.